episode of Blake and Tom Interview Everybody. Last week we had on Shaw, right, Blake?
Yep. Great guest. Great story about moving out to LA to pursue an acting career out of the blue, out of nowhere. So check it out.
Yeah, it's amazing what quarantine will do for some people. And who do we have on this week?
We have Big Dog Joe is in the house.
I guess better to be called Big Dog than Old Dog.
What's up, dude?
Not much, man. You?
That's going to be hard to edit out, but keep going. Just coughed right into the microphone. That's sweet.
That's all right.
So, we wanted to kick it off a little bit. Mm-hmm. This is our, 10th episode?
Yeah, this is going to be number 10, so
excellent.
Thanks for coming on. And being
absolutely. I appreciate milestone. You guys taking the time and having me on here.
Oh, it's no big deal. We love having on interesting stories and just new people. So
yeah.
It's always nice to have somebody on with different perspectives and different life stories.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of the key of what you guys try to do each week, because long-time listener, first-time podcaster. Yeah. I appreciate what you guys do as far as the podcast goes. A lot of good stories and a lot of interesting perspectives on things.
Well, thank you. To start off, what do you do for work, and how do you spend your time off? We'll go with something pretty basic.
So I am a mechanic, specifically a technician at a Subaru dealership. I have been a mechanic for almost 20 years now. My spare time, I play a lot of video games at this point just because of time, but when I'm not doing that, I have a 1972 Volkswagen Beetle that I toy with. I have a 240SX that I toy with that hopefully will be on the road this year. But I have an amazing girlfriend that I try to spend time with as well. So nothing hyper interesting, but I take it day by day like everyone else.
Good for you, man.
How many, I think Ali's told me this before, but how many cars have you had? It's a wild
30, number. I think, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know, the wild thing about that isn't actually the number itself. It's more so, I have friends who dwarf that number. Like, I have friends who run through cars like you wouldn't believe.
Has there ever been a car, just because I'm remembering back to a story my dad told me. My dad, when he was dating my mom, when they got married, he had a really old Chevelle, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he ended up having to sell it because they had my brother on the way and they didn't really have room for it. Was there ever a car you had that you didn't want to get rid of, but you had to, just for whatever purpose?
Mm-hmm. The Beetle, believe it or not. And I actually, 6 months later, I ended up getting it back. I was dating someone at the time, and, she got my car thing, addiction, whatever you want to call it. And I wanted to get a Datsun 280Z, a 1978, and she was like, sure. And, she was going to help me pay for it and stuff like that, and I would pay her back and yada yada. But she was like, well, you can't have both. Like, it's a little ridiculous to have two cars, because at the time, the Beetle didn't have an engine in it. It was in a lot of pieces. It was like a German piece of IKEA furniture without the instructions. And so I got it. So my friend Tom, who, I want to talk about someone who has some cool cars. He has a late 40s, early 50s Cadillac. He has a AE86 that's all original. He has a Volkswagen Type 3 on airbags, a green one. He lives in Manch, so you might have seen it around there. He had a Civic Waggle van for a while that was lifted on a cord suspension. He's owned some real cool stuff. But anyways, he was interested in it because he had always wanted a Baja Bug and he loves the old air-cooled Volkswagens. So I sold it to him. I told him what was wrong with it and stuff like that. And then 6 months later, I don't know, man. Like, the Beetle by no means is a nice car. It rides like garbage. It is so loud that my ears ring when I get home for at least a half hour. There's no radio. You can smell gas in it. Like, it's not a great car by any standards. But I've had it for 12 years, if you don't count that six-month period. And I think as a car guy, you come upon that one car, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, about 6 months in, I was just like, I need the car back. Like, it's just, I felt like I lost a pet, as weird as that sounds.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
And just when the tow truck showed up with the car and everything, I had tears in my eyes because I legitimately missed that car. Granted, I accidentally set it on fire once, but I missed it.
I love you, but
yeah,
fire.
Yeah.
So what is it? Rewinding the clocks back before the 30 cars too. What got you into cars, and what keeps the passion like fueling? Because I mean,
what keeps it alive?
Yeah.
So what got me into cars isn't exactly the greatest story in the world. So I won't go into too much details. My childhood at some points was not what you would call fun or enjoyable, and not something I would wish on anyone. And cars was a distraction. My grandfather was into cars, and I was very close to him. And I was very close to my grandmother, and they both enjoyed cars. And he had these books with these old hot rods and even concept cars. Like, a lot of the stuff from the 80s was wild. The 90s was wild. And I would just delve into those. Like, before video games, that was my escape. Books. I read like you would not believe. And these, you know, these beautiful cars and stuff like that. So I buried myself in them. And what keeps the fire going, as far as that goes, after, I mean, I'm 36. So, I mean, what keeps it going is it's you and the machine. At the end of the day, it's you and the machine. You know, that's why, Blake, I remember, you know, I was telling a story about my BRZ, but that's why I like that particular car so much, because, sure, the BRZ doesn't have much in the way of horsepower. The Bug has 60 horsepower on a good day. And, but it's just you and the car. You know, something breaks. I did not go to school to be a mechanic at all. I was going to be an English teacher. I went to school for a year at Middlesex Community College, you know, studying English as my major. And I kept breaking the Oldsmobile I had at the time. I actually shattered a pair of brake rotors because I just wore them down. And one day the brake, I heard tink, and then the brake pedal went to the floor. And I had to learn how to fix it because I couldn't afford to pay someone to fix it. So that's how I got into it. And, you know, I will fully admit that doing it for a living dulls the flame a little, because the last thing you want to do working on other people's cars all day is come home and work on your own stuff. And it's tough. That's honestly, that's part of the reason why the 240 has sat for so long. Part of it is parts availability and stuff like that. But, I mean, a lot of it is when I get home, I just want to relax. You know, video games are more my escape now than cars are. The Beetle, though, the Beetle is just a visceral experience. It's not, you don't get in it because, oh, this will be a nice drive. You get in it because you want to just put your full attention and whatever into just going for a ride and feeling the car and hearing the car. And It's an experience every time I drive it. And it's funny because, you know, I said it's not the greatest car. Like, I'll get in my Crosstrek after, and the Crosstrek feels like a fully loaded Lexus compared to that thing. It's amazing. But the Beetle is just – and I kind of identify with that car a little bit because, you know, it's beat up. It's rusty. It shouldn't still be going. But, you know, every time I go out there and turn that key, somehow that car just goes, yep, let's go. And I'll sit there in the driver's seat, and I'll be bewildered sometimes because I'll be like, this car shouldn't still be running. But after almost 50 years, I think it's 47 years old now, 48. I'm not great at math. That car probably should have been in a scrap heap a long time ago, you know? So.
In a lot of ways, it sounds just like a pet you might adopt from a shelter, that somebody may not have wanted it. It, you know, breaks your heart, but somebody may not have wanted it and just came across and needed the right person to take care of it and bring it in and, you know, just show it a little bit of love and life.
Yep. And that's kind of how I look at the 240 too. I actually got, this is my second 240SX, and I bought it off a friend of his had brought it up from North Carolina, and it just sat in a field. And, you know, I used to be into drifting and stuff like that, so I had my fun with it, but I'm aware of the car scene, I'm aware of the drift scene, and I see all these cars getting destroyed, and I'll admit, I was a little inebriated, having a moment of nostalgia, and I realized that I'm probably not going to own another one of these things. I mean, you guys have seen the market, it has skyrocketed, especially during quarantine and stuff like that. Even JDM engines for those things have skyrocketed. And this was thankfully in 2019 when I got the car. But one night I sent him a text. I was like, hey man, do you still have that gray 240 sitting in your yard? And he's like, yeah, it's got no drivetrain. It's a shell. Like, you'll have to put it together. And I was like, you know what? I'm down. Give me a price, and I'll be up with a U-Haul. And that was that. And, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, you're dealing with someone else's mess anytime you buy one of these older cars. But I know that it's – this is, like, the last one I'll own. And you I know they're not living things and stuff like that, but you end up feeling bad for them, you know, because they get used, they get thrown in a field, on to the next. So,
so drifting, we're talking Nissan,
mm-hmm.
Datsun.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to Japan before?
Unfortunately, no. I have been to Bermuda, Ireland, and London.
Were those all for car things, or were they just for travel?
So the London thing was for beatboxing, believe it or not. There, I used to be really big into the beatboxing scene and stuff like that. And there was a forum, I think it still exists, I'm not sure, called hbb.com or humanbeatbox.com, and they had BoxCon, which isn't the greatest name, but it got the point across, right? And one of my favorite beatboxers was going to be there that particular year. I think it was 09. And
Blake from American Idol.
Yeah, obviously. No. Actually, a lot of people did not like him.
Really?
Oh. No, it was a guy named Beardy Man. He's the only dude that I know of, it could have changed, who won the World Beatboxing Championships back to back. Like, he is insane. For anyone listening, if you want to check out something wild, Google his kitchen routine, and it's just insane. But anyways, so I was when I was really into it, I was decent at best, passable at best. I wasn't great, and I wasn't looking to be great because it was fun. Right. You know, there are some things you do that are fun that you're like, I'm never going to be the next, like guitar. Like, yep. I'm never going to be the next Hendrix. I'm not looking to be. I play for me. Beatboxing was for me. And I was lucky enough to go over there. I actually got to perform on one of the stages in front of people. And it was a blast. London was cool. Oh, the food was so good. The curry over there, just nothing over here touches it. It was so good. But, unfortunately, Japan is on the list. It's a very short list of places I still want to travel. But Japan would really be the only one for cars, you know? Like, I know I own the Volkswagen, but I'm not, like, a super German car guy, stuff like that. Like, I like them, but it's not, like, my, you know, favorite. Like, Japanese cars have always just kind of caught my attention. And muscle cars.
Yeah.
But I over 20 years of wrenching, I've played with Japanese cars more. So you kind of, that's kind of my lane at this point.
You thinking of BoxCon?
No, I was thinking of BoxCon. I
pictured just like a convention of literal cardboard boxes.
We
like
all got given one before we got in, and we had to wear them over our heads and beatbox. It was a challenge. It was a challenge. Back to you in the studio, Dave.
So what was it? Because I want to talk about that a little bit too. So like, how did they go about judging it?
It wasn't a competition, thankfully. It was just kind of like a showcase.
Okay.
I hate to even say this, but there was actually a performance of... So, you guys know what dubstep is, right?
Yeah.
Right. But this was like dubstep before it was electronic. Like, it was like the more reggae dub. It's the only time I've ever fallen asleep during a show. I feel so bad saying it. But it's been over 10 years, so I feel like I'm allowed.
Yeah, you're okay. Time's passed.
Yeah. So, so basically how it went was, you know, we all descended upon London. I stayed in a hostel around the time the Hostel movies came out. Yeah, that was fun. It wasn't bad though. I have a couple stories for that, but not podcast appropriate.
off the air, we'll talk about
Yeah.
It.
But, and then we would meet up at the convention center and, you know, everything was scheduled. My slot was, I think, the second day or something like that, and people went up. They had X amount of time to just kind of show off, do what they could do, and that was it. And it was fun because there was no competitive air about it. It was, we're all here for a good time. Let's drop some beats and, you know, do the thing and the stuff. And yeah. It was cool. You know, it's funny to circle back to cars. I feel like car shows used to be like that. Like, it used to just be for fun, be for this, be for that. But now, because of social media and stuff like that, and I don't mean that in the old man, like, oh, social, because social media is awesome for cars. It really is. Because you can, I never knew about this car. I never, like, the Renault Dauphine, never knew about it. The freaking spare tire comes out of the bumper in the front. Never knew about that. And it was the coolest thing I had ever seen because of, I think I found it on Instagram by accident, you know. But on the flip side, the car show thing is, I feel like everyone's just building their cars for everyone else, you know.
To kind of show off, you think?
Yeah. You know, this is the trend. Well, I can do the trend. What's next, you know? There are some cars that even I personally don't like. Like, what is it? That slammed cross track, slam track or whatever it is. Not my style. But it's cool because nobody else is really doing it.
Right.
You can tell that's a, I wanted to do this with the, with my car, so deal with it type deal, you know. But a lot of the stance cars and stuff like that, it's tough because I like them and I respect the work that goes into it because it is a lot of work to get the wheels to fit the way they do and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it feels competitive, you know, which is why I don't really go to a lot of car shows anymore, you know. I kind of keep to myself as far as car goes, or, you know, when I talk to you about cars or Alley and stuff like that.
Do you find, because not only beatboxing, but you're into guitar, music, cars, when you want to unplug after a long day, where do you kind of fit those things against each other? Do you find yourself, I mean, you work with cars, so maybe do you gear more towards video games, you know, music? Like, where do you sort those vices for yourself, and like, what makes one better than the other? Music versus cars, things like that.
So music comes first. Again, I am an average, maybe above average, I guess, guitar player, and I'm self-taught with that, which is probably why I'm just above average. But I can come home, kind of just splat on my couch, and I can pick up my guitar, I can close my eyes and just kind of drift off, you know. You do that in a video game, your teammates start yelling at you and stuff like that. Capture the point. Huh? What? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I was closing my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I keep an acoustic right next to the couch. I have a room upstairs that I have my other guitars and an electronic drum set. I don't like electronic drum sets, by the way. They don't feel right. They don't rebound right and stuff like that.
They're weird. And then they make the same automatic sound, so every hi-hat sounds the same. Yep. It's not natural. It's very strange.
Yeah, you don't have that, like, wrist muscle variation with, like, the amount of strike you put into it or power you put into it. But, yeah, no. And it was funny because I started out a drummer, but I play guitar more now, you know?
Yeah, same.
And, yeah, music comes first because it's just – it's easier to lose myself in, you know? With video games now, there's always challenges and stuff like that and yada yada, which, I mean, it's fun, you know, to take your mind off of this. I'll escape into Destiny and just read lore and stuff like that. But now with music, you can just put the guitar in your hands and just kind of drift away at your own pace because it's your song and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a time, I know personally for me, I had the high school phase where I was like, oh, I'm going to be the next Beatles. I'm going to be the next Led Zeppelin. Shows how that turned out, and I'm in parts of being a teacher, but not that there's anything wrong with it. But did you ever have any aspirations of becoming a musician, or did you ever get close to that, record a song? I think we talked about a demo.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, my group, I guess, never really got that far. I mean, we tried doing a garage band thing, but it sounded horrendous, mm-hmm. and I think I deleted it from my computer just so I wouldn't have to hear it. But
yeah.
Was that ever in the cards for you, or did you ever want that sort of thing for yourself?
So when I was a kid, I had stars in my eyes in a lot of ways, you know, and music was one of them. And I loved the bands. I can't sit here and say that there was ever a band I was in that I was like, I regret ever doing that, because it was another way to enjoy music with friends, you know. And yeah, it would have been awesome. We had a Tascam 4-track cassette. Yes, I'm that old. We had a Tascam 4-track cassette recorder that we would do stuff, or I would do stuff by myself as well and try to record layers and stuff like that. And it was the goal for a while. I was in a band called Chasing Ghosts, and that was the closest really to, like, we were playing shows. We had like a very tight sound. We recorded a demo. I lost that demo and I regret it because I was very proud of that. That was a very good piece of work, you know, and I know it's biased to say, oh, the band I was in was good, but like I genuinely felt that we had something. And then, you know, band stuff happens and it just kind of fell apart, which stinks. But yeah, no, that was the goal for a while. And then it's kind of cliche, but I feel like everyone after a certain age just kind of realizes, yeah, it isn't going to happen. And that's okay, you know. And then you have the people who keep trying, and that's good on them too. It's kind of whatever fits what you're able to do and what you still want to do or what you have the energy to do, you know. So
I got a quick question for that. Is there a show that you remember that was just absolutely insane? Was there like a fight in the crowd, or were they really vibing with what you guys were doing? Like one extreme or the other. Is there ever a show you can remember that relates to either of those points?
So there are two shows in particular that stick out. One of them was we did a cover of Killswitch Engage. Not My Last Serenade. End of Heartache. We did a cover of End of Heartache, and that was one of those songs in the metal scene during the 2000s. Everyone knew that song. You didn't even have to like Killswitch Engage. Everyone knew that song, and it was funny because we got done our set, and the sound guy's like, "You guys have you got time for one more?" And I look over at the other guitarist. I'm like, "Killswitch," because I knew the crowd would love it. And yeah, everyone was singing along, and it was just amazing. Sure, it was a cover song, whatever, you know, but it was cool. It was very cool. And then kind of on the other side of the coin, one of the last shows I played with them, I told you guys earlier when the lead singer was being a diva, and we literally had to fire one of our singers before the show, and I had to do vocals. But the energy was way different when you do vocals because, you know, as a guitarist, you put your energy into it, or as a drummer, you put your energy into it. But the guy with the microphone is the guy ultimately talking to the crowd and being like, get up and stuff like that, you know? And it was wild to be doing that. I've never felt an adrenaline rush like that since. So.
Wow. I'm trying to think of when we should ask our questions.
We got a couple more minutes. Okay. So we got one more.
So now, so with all your passions within the next, you know, you're rebuilding the 240, still into music, everything like that. Do you see yourself getting back into something like that? Like you talked about live shows, stuff like that.
I would love to. Unfortunately, I kind of live in the middle of nowhere, which is a little difficult for networking. But, you know, I think life in general shows us on multiple occasions as we kind of go along, that things change. Things change really quick. 2020, I think, being the cliche, but prime example of that. I would be down, you know. I still talk to a lot of my old friends who still play music, and if any of them were like, oh, come on down and jam and stuff like that, I would definitely make an effort to set aside time. I think it would be cool. I enjoy the recording process. I enjoy the writing process. I'm not
definitely
like I write lyrics and stuff. I'm not great when it comes to music theory, so I need someone else to kind of help with that. But I would absolutely be down to make music again, like in a band or even just recording one by one. You know, I think it would be great because as you go on in life, you only have so many chances, I think, to really express yourself. And when you have the chance, you should do it. And music is kind of my lane to do that. I mess with cars, but I'm not a hot rod builder. I don't express myself through my car builds. You know, I can't draw worth anything. You know, video games, you're not really, I don't really express myself through video games. You know, I'm not a content creator, stuff like that. So music is kind of the lane that I inadvertently chose, but I have zero regrets about choosing.
You're saying that you don't express yourself in video games through like those emotes and the emojis, like the Fortnite dances?
For the record, I don't play Fortnite. But no, like when I usually do them in Destiny, I play Destiny 2, I play Destiny 1. It's more just as a joke. You know what I mean? Like, right. Like someone will, you know, get killed in the middle of a firefight or something, and I'll walk over and I'll do the wave emote, like, hi, you're dead. Gotcha. Or, you know, when you accomplish something, you do what emote you can. But no, I don't feel it in the same way, I guess. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I completely agree. And a lot of those make me cringe. A lot of the time, I'll be honest. It's like the Fortnite dances and all that sort of thing. Whenever you put them in games, it really makes me uncomfortable, if I'm being completely honest.
Super uncomf for the kids at home.
Yeah. Which part of that answer actually bled right into your question. So do you want to ask yours and then I'll ask mine?
Yeah, so we, as you know, we wrap up. Mm-hmm. Last couple questions. I've changed mine a little bit as well. It's more so, what do you have for advice of people that, you know, are starting off a new journey or maybe similar journey as you, you know, maybe a music journey, maybe, you know, flipping cars and mm-hmm. restoring them. But also that can segue into, you know, when you look back on this, because, you know, everyone kind of looks back on these even in years in the podcast, what do you have for your future self advice? What do you want to say to yourself in the future, to especially coming out of this year?
Couple things. One is, I firmly believe as we go on in life, we only have one flame. And things that occur during our lives can dull that flame. And regardless of your failures, of your inconsistencies, your inability to do this, that, and the other thing, don't let that dull your flame. You have to keep burning bright. If not for yourself, sometimes you got to do it for other people. You know, there have been times where I've been working on my own issues, but I got to be there for friends. And that's, you know, everyone I would hope would do that. You know, you can't lose sight just because you break a bolt or you have an awful day, week, month, year. You have to keep your flame going, because at the end of the day, ultimately, it's your responsibility. It's your flame to have burned bright. And you will fail, and you will have inconsistencies. You will have good days, bad days, otherwise. But you can't let that dull that flame, or dull your shine, however you want to put it. And then the other one is, and this is something I've learned kind of over the years, is everyone has a choice when they wake up in the morning. I don't think we actively make it. I think it's just something that kind of happens. But we have a choice between being a decent human being and just being awful. And as I've learned, as I've kind of grown, I don't want to say matured, because it would be a stretch, but as I've gone on in life, I've learned that it takes so much less effort to be a decent human being. It really does. It's exhausting being a jerk. And I wish more people realized that, you know, especially with the way things are now, just in our country, in the world, political, non-political, just everything is just, people put themselves versus everybody else. And it's not like that, you know, just, it takes little to no effort to be a decent human being, and I think we could all use a reminder of that.
It's an incredible answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the, I mean, I don't want to insult anybody else we've had on here, but that's one of the better answers I've heard, and it just, it resonates a lot, and I hope everybody can take a little bit of that and just make a small effort to be just a better person. It, like you said, it can be exhausting mm-hmm. being a jerk, and you know, I saw it the other day at a retail store, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes no sense to me. Somebody going up to the counter, the person working the cash register was just saying, like, hi, how are you? Person had no answer, kept to themselves, didn't say thank you, didn't say anything. And it's just, you know, like, who's benefiting from that? Are you really that self-absorbed mm-hmm. that you can't even say hello or thank you? I mean, even if you're having a terrible day, how little effort does it take to just say hello?
And I mean, there are days, I mean, you know, being a mechanic is stressful regardless of what level it's at, dealership, independent, whatever. And there are days where I will lose my cool at work and I'll come home and just be exhausted. And there are other days, like today was a good day. It was busy, but it was a good day. And, you know, I still have energy. I mean, I'm still talking to you guys, but mm-hmm. I'll still be like, hey, you know, things are okay. And I think that's where we lose ourselves, is when tempers start to flare and stuff like that. You know, and it's hard to take a step back and go, all right, let's pump the brakes. But, you know, it's just, like you said, it's so simple to just not be a jerk, or however you want to phrase it, you know, just, it's easier to be a positive influence, and so much more comes out of it. You know, my boss took me aside one day because I had had a rough week, and, you know, he's like, you work near Allie, who's, you know, she's in her early 20s. She's still starting her journey, her career. Mm-hmm. You know, you work near a couple other younger people. I put you there because, you know, I want them to learn from you, or you can help them out. And that kind of changed things for me, because I don't want them to be miserable in this line of work. I don't want to be the reason why they stop wrenching because, oh, there was this dude I worked with. He was just insufferable all the time. You know, and even outside of that, if I'm having a bad day, that's my problem. It's not Blake's problem. It's not your problem. It's not the person at Dunkin' Donuts. You know, I see people lose their cool because you go to McDonald's, you order a burger, you ask for no pickles. Now there's pickles on it. Like, really? Like, that's what's going to ruin your day? Like, just don't get caught up on it. And just be nice. You know, I know it's easy to put it on bumper stickers and stuff like that, but just be nice. It's really not that hard. And if I can do it, then anybody can do it.
That almost perfectly, I just popped my pee again. That almost perfectly bleeds into my question, which I'm trying to rephrase it, because if we ever have on a guest who's who English is not their first language, I'm going to confuse the living hell out of them. So I'm going to try to rephrase that right now. All right. My question is, what is happiness to you, and how will you know when you're happy?
That's a very good one. Happiness is tough because, a lot like the term perfection,
yep,
it's abstract. It's very abstract. Blake and I are going to have different answers. You and I are going to have different answers. You and Blake are going to have different answers, and so on and so on. For me, it's just when things are simple, when there's a balance. You know, sometimes it's not about who you get to spend time with during the day. Like, you know, obviously when I spend time with my girlfriend, I'm on cloud nine. But, you know, I have to have happiness when I'm not around her. So it's different. It's basically, you know, was today a total loss? No? Cool. You know, it's as simple as that. And I think, again, that's something we lose sight of, is things don't have to be complicated. Just keep it simple and things will go. They will go with the flow. Sometimes it's not the right flow and you got to deal with it after. And that's fine. But for me, happiness is just simplicity, you know, kind of an absence of drama and a little bit of balance. And that's really it. I'd like to think that I'm not a super complicated dude. You know, I know it's easy to say that, but, you know, I try to keep things simple with people. I'm straightforward. I try to keep things straightforward. And in that, I find my happiness, because there's no loose strings or anything like that. It's just very straight to the point. Very simple. This is this, that is that, and my day continues. And, you know, if it ends up okay, awesome. And if it doesn't, well, we'll have to deal with it tomorrow.
One of my favorite reasons for asking that question is exactly what you said. Everybody has a different perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And it's the idea behind asking that question is, in case somebody isn't having, you know, the greatest month, the greatest week, greatest year, whatever that reason may be. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that answer provides a little bit of insight to them, and then saying, you know what, your day, your year, your week might not be going the way you want it, but if you just take a step back and look at it from somebody else's perspective, maybe you are happy and you just don't even realize it because you're comparing yourself to an unfair standard or something like that.
Yeah, and I will never, ever, ever, ever stand here and tell someone, oh, things are going to get better, because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you know? My house could get hit with a nuke. I don't know. But, because it's easy to say when you're not in the person's shoes. It's, yeah, it's cliche and very stereotypical and whatever to say it, but empathizing does not mean you have to be in that person's shoes. Empathizing means you can just be like, hey, listen, I know things are tough. Let's keep going. I got your back. And even if you can't have them back, have their back, rather, be like, let me encourage you. You know, obviously you don't have to say it as bluntly, but just being there is the help, you know, or having someone there for you is the help. That gets you to the next step or past whatever muck you're trying to wade your way through, because that happens sometimes, you know. And when there's not a helping hand, sometimes you got to look inwards, and that's scary, but you got to do it, because you, at the end of the day, are fighting your battles, no one else.
And that's the thing with this podcast too, is, you know, a lot of podcasts people listen to are a lot of famous people, and they're getting perspectives of their favorite celebrities or whoever. And what we like about this podcast is it's people just like us. It's our friends, people who are close to us. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help people relate to those, you know, messages and things.
Exactly. And it's nice to hear from a celebrity every once in a while. I mean, sometimes you do want to hear what Taylor Swift thinks,
yeah,
or what Paul McCartney thinks. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no, because we're supposed to be talking to everybody. But I think it's very nice to hear just from your neighbor or your friend or the person down the street, and hearing what they think, because I feel like that's more relatable, and that's, in my opinion, more important than hearing from another celebrity or another person who lives out in such an isolated place.
You know, on that note, I think one thing that one person, rather, who really kind of embodied that spirit of, you know, just take it simple, was Mr. Rogers. You know, you talk about your neighbor and stuff like that. Like, he was that dude. It doesn't matter whatever you were, black, white, you know, Latino, left-handed, right-handed. It didn't matter, because he was like, listen, just be my neighbor. We'll get through this. We'll learn a few things along the way. And if things get rough, hey, that's okay. And, you know, I think it would be cool if we had a celebrity who was like that. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who really kind of embodies that right now. There are different shades of it, but Mr. Rogers was it as far as that went, you know.
R.I.P. Alrighty, so I feel like now's a good time to wrap it up. We're at our length, but thank you so much for coming on, man. And it's nice to have somebody so down to earth and just full of good stories and good mentorship too.
Yeah, we're so excited for this.
Yeah,
very much so.
I mean, I was excited too, but no, I appreciate it. You know, it's cool just to sit down and chat, and you know, if somebody takes something away from what I said, cool. And if they don't, hey, just as cool, because I got to hang out with you guys and do something fun. So at the end of the day, I think everybody wins, which is rare. So you got to enjoy it when it happens.
True.
Absolutely agree. And if you like this episode, please like, share with a friend, share with family, leave a rating if you feel like it. If not, that's cool, and we'll see you next week.
Feel free to reach out too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have on anybody who's interested. So if you're interested in that, reach out on Facebook, reach out on comments on Apple.